Welcome.
My name is Father C. John McCloskey. I'm director of the Catholic Information Center of the Archdiocese of Washington, and also priest of the Prelature Opus Dei. We want to welcome you once again to our EWTN series, exploring the life, work, and thought of Cardinal John Henry Newman. Today's guest is Father Drew Morgan of the Pittsburgh Oratory. Father Morgan is going to talk to us today on Newman as the oratorian, his particular vocation given to him by God and freely chosen by himself and his followers inside of the Catholic Church. Father Morgan has his doctorate in theology from Duquesne University. He wrote his doctorate on Newman and conscience, and he has been a priest for a good number of years in the Pittsburgh Oratory, and continues his pastoral work in the spirit of a great campus minister, if we could apply that term to Cardinal Newman, on the campus of Carnegie Mellon University and the University of Pittsburgh. Father Morgan, thank you for being with us here today.
Thank you, Father, and thank you for the having this series on Venerable Newman. It's advancing the cause, of course, of his eventual beatification and hopefully his canonization, and also it helps us as the oratory to be a little more well-known and the connections that exist between the oratory and Newman.
St. Philip Neri, who we're going to talk about in a moment, used to say that he was a bell ringer for the Jesuits, so I'm very happy to be a bell ringer on this broadcast, and many more people get interested in the congregation of the oratory. Perhaps we could start off our episode on dealing with Newman as an oratorian by your explaining to our viewers a little bit about the foundation and the history of the oratory, so we can set the Venerable John Henry in that scene when the moment comes.
I was just in Rome, and it was very nice to see a statue of St. Philip Neri and one of the great pillars in St. Peter's Basilica, along with the other founders of the religious communities during the Catholic Reformation. Philip Neri was the founder of the oratory, although he didn't really want to found anything. He said it was the Blessed Mother who founded the community for him. Philip was born in 1515 in Florence, Italy, and it was there that he experienced from very early on a life that was full of grace, had a sensitivity of heart towards prayer and towards charity. In fact, interesting little story, as there are many of St. Philip, he was only had to be disciplined once in his life as a child. He was praying the Psalms with his sister, and another sister came in and interrupted them, and he gave her a little push. And when he was disciplined, he cried with great remorse and promised never to act in that manner again. Philip continued in prayer and charity, besides that little push, and he eventually found his way to a place called Gaeta near Monte Cassino. And it was there that he lived long hours in prayer, spending a great deal of time at this place where, at the time of the crucifixion, the mountain split, one of the earthquakes, the mountain split, and there's a chapel there dedicated to St. Philip Neri. In that prayer, he discerned that he had a special calling from God, and consulted one of the monks in the area, and that monk reassured him through a vision that he received from St. John. Some places John the Baptist, other sources say John the Evangelist, that his India was to be Rome. Philip was thinking about joining the Jesuits and pursuing with Francis Xavier conversion of the people in India.
So it's a wonderful example for us today of the importance of the mission, we'd almost could say ad intra,
yes.
That the real mission territory, as many of us know and our viewers know, is right where we are.
That's right. And when he went to Rome then to begin his mission of prayer and ministry, he spent long hours there in the catacombs. And it was in the catacombs in 1544 where he received, at the time of Pentecost, the celebration of Pentecost, a vision of the Holy Spirit. The Spirit came visibly to him in a ball of fire, entered his heart, and Philip was overwhelmed with the love of God. And he had to throw himself to the ground and cry out, "No more, Lord, no more. Your love is too great for me." And from that time on, Philip's heart, which had expanded with this experience, was a palpitating heart, and it was a source of many miracles, wonder-working miracles in his life. People who were tempted by sin, he would draw them to his breast, it would palpitate, and no longer would they be tempted in that way. And in fact, at one point, there was even a child, a young boy, who was resuscitated, raised from the dead, and assured Philip that he was going to paradise, and so Philip allowed him then to return to the dead.
I believe on his death, when they did the, I do not know if you talk about an autopsy, they were probably getting him prepared for him, the many relics of St. Philip Neri there are throughout the world. They found indeed a very enlarged heart, and it had palpitated so much that it had broken several of his ribs.
That's correct.
This was not simply a mystical phenomenon, this was a physical reality.
Right. The Pope actually had to give Philip special dispensation to come into his presence with his soutane unbuttoned at the top because the excessive heat of the fire of God was so great in Philip's mm-hmm. life. But it was there that he founded the oratory in Rome, and the intention was not to found another religious community. He felt that there were plenty of religious communities, that this would be a community of prayer and charity, much like Philip's own personality. And it was there in Rome that these young men, oftentimes of noble families, would go to the hospital for the pilgrims that were coming for the Jubilee year of 1550, and they would clean the beds, clean wounds, sweep around, and that they would return then to either the pilgrimage of the seven churches or back to the oratory, which was actually the prayer loft at San Geronimo.
Lots of singing and yes. picnic lunches and
That's
great
right.
fun.
Right. And in those prayers times, there would also be a deep sense that it was the lay people, it was the spirituality of the lay people, that they could also give informal talks, which led to some difficulty for Philip because the word got back in jealousy that he was allowing lay people, laymen, to preach at Mass. And, of course, he never did do that. It was only in these informal talks of the oratory. The place was called the oratory. The group was called the oratory, and the exercises were called the oratory. For creative men, it seems a little odd that they couldn't come up with another couple words other than just keeping oratory as the main name.
And for our viewers who are serious music aficionados, tell us about the oratorio.
Yeah, the oratorio was something that was invented at the oratory. Palestrina was a young man who was influenced by Philip Neri, as was Caravaggio. Caravaggio's paintings shifted at that time from a more secular, sort
sensual,
of sensual
mm-hmm.
classical, you know, Bacchus and mm-hmm. things like this, to a beautiful and very ingenious expression of Catholic art that is founded upon the principles of the Catholic Reformation.
Mm-hmm.
A strong sense of the sacramentality of the human body and the moments that are so decisive in the life of Christ.
When was the Congregation of the Oratory formally approved, or can we say officially mm-hmm. founded, and how did it take shape? Who were its first followers?
1575 was the establishment of the oratory canonically, and of course Baronius, one of the first of the great modern church historians, was the second provost after St. Philip, but certainly a faithful follower. And Tarugi, who also became a cardinal in the oratory, founded the Naples Oratory shortly after that. Mm. It's a strong and a fervent expression of counter-Reformation, Catholic Reformation spirituality. Interestingly enough, Philip Neri was canonized on the same day as Ignatius Loyola, Teresa of Avila, and Isidore of Seville. The little joke around Rome was that, in fact, the Pope that day had canonized a saint and three Spaniards.
Appreciated in some circles, not in others.
Yeah, that's right. There was a strong sense of humor that was in Philip's life. He would often give penance. He saw the sacrament of reconciliation, of confession, as essential for the reformation of the church, as it is for the reformation of individual characters. And he would give some rather comic penances to people. A young man who was caught up in the vanity of his life would wear very stiff, large collars, as they did in the past, unlike our collars, with the very mm-hmm. large collars. And when Philip heard his confession, he gave him the penance of wearing a shaggy dog around his neck through the market streets, and that this was a sign of humiliation for the man, bringing him down to a more real level. A woman who was very vain and involved in gossip, Philip offered her the opportunity to go to the top of the church with a feather pillow and to open up the pillow and to let all the feathers go into the market street. And the woman said, well, that's not difficult at all. And he goes, oh, well, the other half of that is to go collect all of those feathers, because that's the way it is with gossip. We can never bring them all back.
Wonderful lesson.
Yes.
Now, here we hear about the great St. Philip and the spread of the oratories. I imagine they went from Italy to Spain or to France, spread throughout at least Europe yes. in those first several centuries. How did it come about that a shy, reserved, hyper-intellectual Anglican clergyman, upon his conversion, became a member of the oratory of St. Philip Neri? Could you mm-hmm. bring us into that a little bit?
I think the life that Newman was living at Oxford is something that is very clearly a comparison to the life of an oratory. In fact, last year I was visiting at the new oratory in Oxford, one of the dreams of wonderful Cardinal Newman, that he himself could be able to form that. But 100 years later, it was formed after his death.
At St. Aloysius Church?
That's correct, yes. Mm-hmm. And one of the priests told me a joke that comes from Cardinal Newman himself concerning the oratory and the formation of the oratory in England. He said that, I didn't get the joke at first because I didn't understand the nature of Oxford colleges, but the college is based upon a provost who could be married. He would be the head of the college, and then several of the fellows, the teaching fellows, who would remain celibate. And Newman's little joke on this was that, all we have to do is take an Oxford college and do three things. One is change the religion from Anglican to Roman Catholic. Two, kill the provost's wife. And three, ordain all the fellows, and now we have an oratory.
Mm-hmm.
When Newman was converted and then did go to Rome, it was under the advice of Dr. Wiseman, who eventually becomes Cardinal Wiseman, also a Catholic convert and cardinal in England, to go and investigate the oratory of St. Philip Neri. Newman went to visit the Pope, and the Pope gave him graciously an interview. And in that interview, Newman asked a question. He said, who is the holiest priest in Rome? And even though Philip Neri had been dead over 300 years, without thinking, the Pope said immediately, well, Philip Neri, he's the apostle of Rome. And Newman went to the Chiesa Nuova, the New Church, which now is 400 years old but still is called the New Church. And he went to visit St. Philip's and the various community members that were living in Rome. And it was there that he saw the necessity to begin to bring that idea back to the English-speaking world. And as he did this, it was really an aggiornamento. We use that word in terms of Vatican II, a bringing up to date. But Newman did an aggiornamento for the oratory by bringing it into the English-speaking world, taking many of the charismatic elements of Philip Neri, but also bringing it into a milieu that was distinctively English.
We could also refer to another word, which would be enculturation.
Enculturation.
So it would be accepted and understood properly with its own characteristics without anything that would be overly shocking to English sensibilities.
That's right, that's right.
But once he got the approval from Rome, he came back to England and he had to decide where to establish the oratory. Tell us about that process.
Well, the edict that was given from the Holy Father was an edict that it gave a special mission. And again, it was a differentiation from what Philip Neri himself had envisioned, that the Pope wanted Newman to address his ministry to the educated and the noble classes of England, because in fact there were other priests ministering. That the Catholic hierarchy had been restored in 1850 and there were parishes beginning to develop, but Oxford, Cambridge, other places where there were situations of higher education were dangerous for Catholics, and that they would not be able to be formed properly in the Catholic faith. So that Newman would begin a mission, a ministry to that higher level of educated and the noble class. But he went to Birmingham, which was interesting, and yet it was, I think, a very prophetic insight that Newman enacted. London, of course, would have been the first choice, you would think, but Birmingham was the up-and-coming industrial city. We're in the middle of the Industrial Revolution in England. Victorian England is very powerful, and there were many educated people going to Birmingham, and it was a developing city at that time. And also there was an interest to maintain a ministry to the poor. It wasn't just going to be for the rich or the affluent. It was also for the poor who would be present in Birmingham as those who would work in the industries.
How many of his Oxonian followers joined him in the oratory?
Originally, there were quite a few, more than a dozen to 15. But it wasn't too long after they got to Birmingham that another community, this original community was formed at Littlemore, but Father Faber and the Wilfridians had been nearby trying to form a Catholic school. And when they saw that Newman was coming back, that they saw many things that were of similarity to each mm-hmm. other, that the Wilfredians under Father Faber joined the oratory and, in fact, doubled the size of the community almost instantaneously.
Our viewers will recognize Father Faber for a series of wonderful spirituality books that reflect very much an Italianate way of looking at the oratory. He's also, many of our viewers have sung Faith of Our Fathers, which
yes.
is mm-hmm. famous and wonderful hymn, the lyrics of which were written by Father Faber, who was a poet, mm-hmm. among other things. But please continue.
This brings us really to a famous, or maybe we should say an infamous, chapter in oratory, English oratory history, and that was that there was a real differentiation between those two communities. Newman and the Littlemore group were cool, reserved, deep, and private in their expressions of faith and piety, whereas Faber was one who was warm, affectionate, more Italianate, or Roman in this sense, and were more willing to have public expressions of Catholic piety that we would often find in more of a Mediterranean atmosphere.
They would wear their cassocks in the streets, yes. and processions.
Right.
And
they wanted to be very Catholic in a Catholic situation where there were so few Catholics mm-hmm. because of the Anglican suppression for so many centuries. And this differentiation isn't so much that one was right and one was wrong. It was just that there were two different spiritualities, because there were two very strong personalities, Newman and Faber, and therefore two very different expressions of community life. And so it wasn't too long after they tried to come together that there was a break. And oftentimes I think that this is viewed as a very dark time. I'm sure Newman did suffer a great deal because there were goings back and forth between the communities. Members weren't sure which camp they were supposed to be in. But if we look at the fruit of these two communities and the fruits of the lives of Faber and Newman, we can see that maybe it was actually a blessing that was here. That actually with Newman there was a strong commitment to the intellectual life, that there was a willingness to reach out to the local community to establish a firm Catholic presence in Birmingham. And the fruit of that is that they did in fact form the Oxford Oratory 100 years almost to the year of the Cardinal Newman's death. Whereas with Faber, in moving to London and the Brompton Oratory, there was greater emphasis upon addressing the needs of the Catholic aristocracy, the noblemen, the educated class, and they themselves have been a great influence in the experience of oratorianism throughout the world. Might just as an aside add that Tony Blair, the Prime Minister of England, sends his son to the London Oratory School, mm-hmm. and that it's rumored that he also frequents at times the Oratory Church for prayers as well as Westminster Cathedral. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we have a convert in the making, but certainly one who appreciates today the work of Father Faber in continuity with his community.
And there was a certain reconciliation at the end between Venerable John Henry and
yes.
Father Faber, was there not?
That's correct. Mm-hmm. And Newman, even in the three people that caused him perhaps most suffering, Dr. Wiseman, Cardinal Wiseman, Cardinal Manning, mm-hmm. and then Father Faber, there was a reconciliation that they were able to achieve on their lives. It was not a malice or anything. It was misunderstanding, bad timing, but there was also a Christian charity.
Perhaps you could explain to us some of the characteristics of oratory in life and perhaps a day in the life of Cardinal Newman as the father of the Birmingham Oratory.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that.
Well, it's interesting because I think that Newman began his experiment in the oratory in England with an eye towards having a sense of solitude for prayer, for study, which he valued so much, and that there would be also time for confessional, for writing. There would be an ability to minister to the people that would come to the oratory, but very much a drawing people in and yet keeping them at a distance so that there would be time for solitude. But it was in this experience with Father Faber, as well as time went on with other members of the community, that Newman, I think, experienced deeper conversion. It was something different than an Oxford college. It's an oratory of St. Philip, and that conversion was required by living the life of community. Going back to St. Philip's several mottos, understandings that he had of the oratory, that it was Santa Communita, the great and holy community life that was offered from St. Paul all the way through the history of the church, now even to Catholic English experience. That Santa Communita was the sanctification of the personality, and it was usually through trial, through suffering, through mistakes and faults that we find in each other, that there's a purification of the heart that Newman began to experience, where his motto, cor ad cor locutor, the heart speaketh the heart, was really ground in the crucible of the difficulties that he experienced in community life. Another motto of St. Philip that Newman experienced painfully and yet very consistently was vitus communis mortificatio maxima, community life, the greatest of all mortifications.
Thank you for giving us that translation, although I'm sure most of our viewers need no translation from the Latin. But thank you in any case.
Yeah, that's right. And yet that's really for all of us, community life. It's family life. It's relationships at the workplace. Wherever we might encounter each other, that's the charism of Philip Neri trying to be expressed and lived in the broader church. That when we live with each other, we know each other's faults, and yet in charity we forgive, we go on, and we try to live in charity for one another.
What would be a typical day like in the life of the Pittsburgh Oratory, or perhaps the Birmingham Oratory?
Well, there would be, of course, we are secular priests, right. That we don't take vows. So there's an autonomy of our day. There's not an intense community involvement with each other. We would do our morning prayers usually on our own, and then we would go about our ministry, counseling people or maybe teaching.
Campus ministry.
Campus ministry is in Pittsburgh. And then there would be a practice of the daily mass. And usually there's a homily, because from St. Philip, Cardinal Newman, the daily distribution of the Word of God is essential. And then in the afternoons, continuing with counseling, as Cardinal Newman would write letters profusely to people, and oftentimes counsel and evangelize through
spiritual
letters.
Spiritual direction.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And spiritual friendship, as you've had articles written mm-hmm. on spiritual friendship in Newman. But that's the expression of oratorianism in the daily life. But there's also many, many groups that we would have, Bible studies, various manners of which the little oratory or the secular oratory would come together and experience, you know, the common life of the oratory in our involvement with the lay people.
Do you still have oratorios, or are there any musical recitals?
Yes, it's intended that each oratory tries to develop a strong commitment to liturgical music and to preserve the history, and yet also at the same time bring the church with Vatican II into contemporary experiences of music. Well, one of our main masses has the Latin proper of the mass, and we would sing, of course. This Sunday we had a piece by Palestrina.
Oh, very nice. Yeah. Perhaps as we begin to come to an end, you could talk a little bit about the continued influence of Venerable John Henry in the oratory, or the oratories, because the oratories now are spread throughout the world.
Yes. I think the influence is similar to what Philip had. I think that he's a true son of St. Philip, that there was a prayerfulness all through his life, from youth all the way through to old age, a willingness to suffer, a long suffering that Philip and Cardinal Newman have experienced. And a willingness to live that in community, that stability, that perseverance is a strong charism of the oratory. But unlike Philip, Cardinal Newman was one who, I think, offers to us an insight into a contemporary society, especially those who are studying at university. In 1893, 2 years after Cardinal Newman passed away, at the University of Pennsylvania, at Penn, there was the formation of the first Newman Club. And it's interesting that was immediately after his death, and I think that's probably the greatest work or influence that Newman has, and yet very much not known, that the Newman Clubs affect the life of millions of Catholic college students, that they come there in the spirit of Philip Neri and of Cardinal Newman for prayer, for education, for a fellowship, and a deepening in the midst of secular colleges, a willingness there to find holiness of life. And that was really the foundation. It wasn't to become a great scholar, it was to seek holiness of life. And Philip and Cardinal Newman both express that to us still today.
Probably many of our viewers, the first time they've heard of Newman would be in relation with the Newman mm-hmm. clubs of their various
yes.
universities. Unfortunately, the name is not used as much as it should be, but
yes.
I'm sure it has a particular resonance in Pittsburgh, because the oratorians have as
Definitely.
One of their particular apostles
right.
is that of the yeah. of chaplaincies of campus ministry.
But just as Newman mesmerized the undergraduates at Oxford with his preaching and with his spiritual friendship, that charism is still alive and present, I think, in our campus ministries that are present throughout the secular universities and even on Catholic campus, college campuses as well.
Do you have many inquiries of young or not so young men who will write to the Pittsburgh Oratory or to Toronto or London or Birmingham
yes.
saying, I have read the Apologia, or I've read a life of Father Carr or Sheridan Gilley? Or
yes, we do. We have many people interested. It's a difficult vocation, because you really have to know each other. We have a 3-year novitiate, and it's hoped that after 3 years you would know the faults of the members, they would know your faults, that they would also see the high destiny that is to live in the life of the oratory, and that they would aspire to that as modeled by Philip and Cardinal Newman. It's interesting that there are 72 oratories in the world, and there are 20 oratories trying to get started.
In formation.
In various forms of formation.
So we can say there's a little renaissance going on in terms of the oratory.
That's right. And Toronto is a very strong oratory. They have a seminary, philosophical and theological. Oxford has many new members, and we in Pittsburgh have a novice and others who are interested, mm-hmm. and throughout the United States. I think for diocesan priests that this is a model where they could overcome a sense of isolation with one another, living in community, and I hope that they realize that that's not as easy as it might sound. It is a mortification to live in community.
Well, I want to thank you particularly for being with us today. How could we have a series on Cardinal Newman without talking about him as an oratorian and having one of his brothers, in a certain sense, his spiritual sons, in another sense, I guess you could say, to talk about the charism of St. Philip as it was lived by Cardinal Newman, who we pray, and we're precisely by having this series, we're trying to help our viewers grow not only in appreciation of the depth of this great thinker and intellectual and convert, but also to go to his intercession to ask his help so that we also, through his intercession, might be able to bring him to that point where God gives grace so that he might be raised even further to be blessed, to be canonized. Thank you again, Father, for being with us.
Thank you
to the viewers for being with us today. Once again, another episode on the life, work, and thought of Cardinal John Henry Newman in the year 2000.